He didn't say, "Hey, I'm not. I don't do referrals here." You know, he didn't explicitly jump against it. Then you might be able to kind of say, like, "Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, Das, that he wants this referral."
I guess one of the questions we'll have to ask is, to what extent do people have the power to decline to abide by? Like, can you hang out a you know, a sign that says, you know, referrals here are not compensatory or not compensated. The language in the sources today is not generous with the ability of individual people to opt out of these things. I guess we'll get there.
Yeah, so let's jump into the source sheet for today. This is a really rich sugya for a few reasons. So this idea of Rashan B'nei Ha'ir L'Hasiya Al Kitsasan, you know, this is really the makar in halacha for the legislative power of a community to enact takanos and dine mamonis and create rules of commerce and rules of the road, things that you would normally get out of a legislative body. So Rashan B'nei Ha'ir L'Hasiya Al Kitsasan. Let's start with the Tosefta, and then we'll make our way into the Gemara. So who wants to just volunteer to take us through the Tosefta quickly? Give us the highlights. Anyone have a chance to repair the Tosefta? Evan, you want to take us through the Tosefta?
Yeah, so I guess the main point, just kind of abstractly, is that the people of the city are able to sort of band together and have judicial power. So in the Tosefta itself, it's there.
Maybe more legislative power than judicial power.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So they're able to like set certain standard prices. It seems that they're able to kind of just make quote unquote like zero or like fines against certain things. So that's the second part there. Which is so if you go do this thing, we're going to force you to pay some fine.
Penalties, right?
Yeah, penalties. And then
even someone who is like, you let your cow graze in the wrong place, sounds like we could impose a penalty for that, right? Like parking rules and usage rules, right?
Yeah.
Even socializing commerce, right? What do you think of that, Chavdalit?
Right, the whole Shutfin thing. Tuffin.
Which one? Yeah, Shutfin. What's going on there?
So that's I think going back to that guild, the guild thing that we were talking about earlier. That if if you're a dyer and you come to the town, you have to join the, you know, schedule or rules of the dye guild or committee.
Yeah, here I think it's even stronger. I think it's saying that any wool merchant who joins the town, like it's like a profit sharing thing, right? We're all partners in whatever deals are generated from wool selling and wool dyeing, right? So this is, you know, these are all really strong expressions of the community's power to just legislate and regulate commercial rights, economic rights, and property rights. You could masna al asharim, balamidos, valschar poalim. You could define the measurements. You could fix set minimum wages or just standard wages of poalim. You could fine and penalize people for actions that the community doesn't like. And you could either make collective or make socialize certain goods that enter the town. If you look at Halacha Chafhei, you also get this idea of like a social insurance policy. The communal members can say anybody whose donkey dies, you know, the community is going to replace their donkey. If your ship goes down, the community is going to pay back for your ship. Right, so things like these kind of, you know, welfare or social insurance compensation schemes, sounds like Tosefta thinks those are all kosher. Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry. Are we reading these like, I think what Evan called, like, these guild, like, clauses of the Tzamarin or the Safanin or all those things? Are these the same thing as the Rishon B'nai Ha'ir in terms of, like, that there's some sort of community-wide, like, applicable to everyone in the city? Or are these, could we read them as more specific, that the practice of replacing your ship only is applied to the Safanin, and that it's kind of it's not of the same nature as the ability of the broader ear to set kitsasan and things like that?
Yeah, so interesting question. You'll see later on that some Rishonim think there is a distinction between Rasha and Bnei Ha'ir and Rasha in, like, Hatzamarim. They'll think that the Bnei Ha'ir have absolute power on their own, whereas the guilds need the approval of an Adam Chashuv. That's one move, just you see the Rishonim distinguishing between them. Other Rishonim seem to think that, you know, these guilds are just smaller ears, right? So, like, there's no real fundamental distinction. Just an ear is not a fundamental category, just a group of people. We could also have subgroups. And, you know, these are like mini ears. Each industry is an ear unto itself. That's the move that some Rishonim make. So the answer is that it's going to depend on which Rishonim you're asking about. But I think it's pretty interesting that the legislative powers, at least when it comes to monetary issues, are quite broad. The Gemara in Baba Basra quotes part of the Tosefta. So you see it with respect to Ashan B'nai Ha'ir, Lasos Kupa, Tamchoy V'Tamchoy Kupa. They could play around with tzedakah donations and, you know, transfer different kinds of tzedakahs to other kinds of tzedakahs. Ula shanos v'chol masha yirtzu. And here's the crucial part. V'rashayim b'nei ir l'has nos al midas v'al asharim v'al sechar polim ula hasiyah al kitzasan. And as Rashi here says, l'has nos al midas is to define the measurements. Al asharim is the prices for goods. And l'hasiyah al kitzasan is this right to penalize and fine. Evan, why don't you read that Rashi Lasi al Kitzasan? Tell us what you think is going on there.
Yes. So first part is Liknoseta over al Ksiat Tvarim. So that's just what a penalty is. And then Lasiyam Midastin Torah. I guess that's the real kicker, is that the strength or the backing that the Bnei Ha'ir have to set these penalties is, however you want to define midast in Torah, either is as if they have some, divine ability to do so. So they just have the backing of whatever the religious legal authority is, or they have the authority themselves, however you want to see that. But they have some sort of authority other than just themselves.
Well, I think the phrase "lasia midast in Torah" just means to make rules that diverge from the Torah's prescriptions, right? I think that's it's a tricky phrase, but I think the lahasiam is to, like, take them away from, like, to travel away from. Mi is from as a prefix. Das din Torah. Bride. That's how I understand the phrase. Anybody have thoughts on the? So I take Rashi to be saying, like, don't, you know, the community has real legislative power here to enact rules in Dinim Ominis and things pertaining to the economy and property rights, that even if they diverge from the Torah's prescription of the Torah's vision for how these things would otherwise look. Kind of like Minag Mevata Halacha, just Takanas B'nei Ha'ir is Mevata Halacha also.
No? Do you think Rashi's making, like, a linguistic point? Like, he's really motivated by defining what the etymology of the term Lahasiya is here? Like, what is being traveled to or from? And he's saying what's being traveled from is the laws of the Torah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Meaning, what would the monetary rules that would otherwise exist without the Takanas Bnei Ha'ir, right? Does that sound good to everybody? Yeah,
that reduces the force of, like, there could be a potential read in Rashi, like, that we could make a, like, an Eon in Rashi that Rashi's saying here, that he's, like, equate, like, he's making a point specifically about the power of, like, this Rishain is, like, on the level of Din Torah or something like that. We're saying that
please know Eonim in Rashi.
Hmm?
I'm against Eonim in Rashi, Sean Principle.
There's the Din Torah, fair, but the Rashi's not making a point here about the strength of their authority, but he's making just he's defining where their authority is focused.
Well, I think he's speaking to, what's that, Adam?
I mean, that will work with Rabbeinu Gershom. That supports his point.
Yeah, hold up. We're going to get to Rabbeinu Gershom. Good. We'll get to Rabbeinu Gershom.
Could you read this as like Midas Shel, as in like,
yeah,
see, I'm like Midas Din Torahs, and kind of like to the, like, which kind of maybe how everyone was reading it, as kind of like by the power of Din Torah. I think this is like, there's not just Midas Derabanan, this is Midas.
Yeah.
I think you need to X out.
Is the word there Mida? Like, what's the right, what's the word? Is it Mida or is it Das, right? And the mem, I'm reading the mem of it as a prefix.
I think if there was another mem, if it was Lasiam Mimi Das Din Torah, that would be.
No. It's not how that verb works. I can't believe
we're, that's like Das about. Moshe, right? Das Yisrael, right. Thing. It's just like with Dalet Tav.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, I like Zechariah G, but I think we would need another mem there. Like, if it was Mida Shel, it would be Lasiam Mimi Da Shel Din Torah.
Like, no, that wouldn't make any sense with the verb lehasia. You're not lehasia me. It's lehasia. I think there's an omitted. I still can't believe we're talking about this. There's an omitted preposition. She was shaking his head.
Yeah, you're wrong, Cole. So maybe just stop now, and we'll just go.
What do you mean, low? You're saying lehasia midas Torah to help them from das, like. That's what you want to read it.
Like, there needs to be a noun that it's acting on, lahasia. So yeah, that's what he means. Let's go back there.
Shua, you, which side are you on? My on for my reading.
I don't think you're disagreeing.
I'm on Dean's team.
You're on Dean's team.
That it could not be Mida. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're on my team, right?
Wait. Why? What's wrong with Mida? Midas Din Torah could be a noun phrase.
Yeah, but
like, no, we're missing a preposition.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying there's an omitted preposition. They are the referent of the direct object pronoun, the mem sophit at the end of lahasia is referring to. Read it as lahachzikam or something. It's not. Don't translate it as to help them from straying from Das Torah. It's to strengthen or to help their Midas Din Torah. That's the Midas is a. No, Shu, I think you're wrong.
All right,
I'm not a linguist, but Mechlal HaTorah Yirali, that I'm pretty right.
Wow.
There you go. Mechal Torah is Shua's version of what my father would say, like the global view, you know, the global understanding. Right?
Shua, what are you eating?
Yogurt.
So the Ritva here, you get a similar phrase from the Ritva on Chesed Days. Basi al kitzasan pirish lases knas al mishayavor divrayim, to impose penalties and fines. Kolomar shayasi uhu midin Torah. And I think that again means to diverge, travel away from the Din Torah. O mi mamono, o min ha'ir. Either through taking away his money or through kicking him out of the town. And the reason why the people could do this is mishum dehafker bezden hafker. And we'll talk about hafker bezden hafker a little bit. So the Tosafta and the Gemara outline these broad powers. Who has these broad powers, just from your sense of the Tosefta and the Gemara, if you have a sense? Anybody have a sense, like, with whom these powers reside?
The Olam.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like the Olam.
Yeah, because Rosh Hashanah ben Ha'ir, right?
Like, democratically, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, and an analog to the Tzabatin. Presumably the Tzabatin is not the Zakenim. It's not the Zakenim deciding about the Tzabatin. It's the Tzabatin themselves.
Yeah.
So whoever's in charge.
You've never been to the tailor in Mea Shearim, you know? It's like...
What?
No, it's tailor fine. Even the guild members are supposed to be the Zakenim and the... Right? No, I'm kidding. Yeah, in my sense, this is just read the words, Rosh Hashanah and Bnei Ha'ir and Hatzabah and etc. It sounds like it's a power that resides within the Bnei Ha'ir. You don't get the sense that, the Rabbonu Sholom designated the musmachim of the, best yeshiva in town to have the koach to be metakein takanos, right? The words of the Brice are just Rosh Hashanah Bnei Ha'ir, which I think itself is indicative. But Yoni, looks like you have a comment.
Yeah, so the Gemara says that this is limited as long as Adam Chashuv, but still I think the explanations of that both point to what you're saying, right? One of them was the Ramban or Ritva, that like Adam Chashuv is Kavod, or just some mercantile reason that was kind of, that we assumed meant that it was inherent in their mutual understanding. And the other one, which is the Rimigash and others who talk about in the Rush, that it has to be like not just Adam Chashuv or Parnit, but it has to be someone Memunal at Sibor, or somebody who's a leader in other ways, right? That also implies it inheres in the power of the public rather than some like Torahdic legislation.
Yeah, except that I agree with everything you said, except that I disagree with that last formulation. I don't know what you meant by the Torahdic legislation. If you meant by like leadership authority, is that what you were getting at?
Yeah, like Rabbanim poskening stuff. And unless we think that Rabbanim can only posken things for people who accept it upon themselves, which is fine for me also. I'm just saying, if you think like all the Besdin of Queens got together and poskened that all the shuls are closed, right? If you think that that has binding authority above and beyond the fact that you decided to follow them, then I would say this doesn't. This is just because people decided to appoint them.
Good. So this is, I think this is one of the most philosophically rich sugyas out here, right? This is like one of the most basic questions about who has the authority to make takanos and with whom does the power reside in at least communal governance. So there's a lot to take out of this Gemara. Right now, I think the impression is just that this is a din in Bnei Ha'ir. So what I want to do is I want to look at just three tshuvos that explicate this power of Rosh Hashanah and Bnei Ha'ir. You see how it's applied in general as a koach to make takanos against in Torah. And then I want to look much closer at this question about whether it's literally Bnei Ha'ir or the leaders. And if it's the leaders, maybe it's only the leaders as the appointees of the members of the town, right? So you might think it's the leaders of the town, but the reason, as kind of what Mitnick was getting at, the reason why they have this authority is because they were appointed, kind of a representation system. So let's take a look at this. I also want to frame in the back of our mind, obviously in this context, we're looking at Dine Mominis, pure Dine Mominis. The boundaries could be a little permeable. It's not totally obvious that we're limited to Dine Mominis in some cases. So we'll look at some cases, probably on Thursday, where you have a Takanas Bnei Ha'ir that we're going to paskin like the Rambam on all halachic issues. That's not a clear-cut Dine Mominis. It's an interesting question whether you... So let's assume that you can make a Takana like that. If that's a power inherent in the Bnei Ha'ir, that's pretty surprising, right? That the Bnei Ha'ir would have this power to determine which poskim they're going to accept as authoritative. And that's going to happen.
The rabbi is out of business.
What's that, Adin?
We can like make obsolete the entire notion of rabbis.
Like you probably still need somebody to check the shechitas.
Yeah.
I know who's going to give the drashas? Who's going to give the drashas on Shabbos morning?
Fine, we can make obsolete the the notion of poskim, which is vote.
Look how he says this with a smile on his face, sitting in the SAR teacher lounge. Right? Like, what an agenda.
Oh, and teaching.
Well, besides the fact
teaching
that
is Mr. Raymond.
There's also like hundreds of years of like literature on what the Rama meant in like a million different cases. So like even if you pass like the Rama, it doesn't really solve any problems.
They'll still be able, so the briskers will still be able to earn a living, but the post.
There you go. That's why everyone's just working within Rambam interpretation, you know? Comes all the more. Okay.
Can I ask a slightly tangential question here?
Please.
For the political theory junkies. What is the vacuum of which this Tosefta is filling, or the Bryce is filling? Like, what was the intended governmental structure to legislate or to regulate communal standards in, like, I don't know, let's say Chumash or some pure form of Torah governmental structure?
Say it again.
Was this Bryce's responsibility?
Say this again. Pose the question.
Gabe, you're breaking up, Gabe.
Oh, sorry. Never mind. Scratch that. Come back to me.
No. Say, we want to hear your question. Just go say it one more time.
Can you hear me now?
Much better.
Okay. What was the, like, who was intended to regulate government, like, these kinds of questions in a Torah governmental model in some idealized form? Like, assuming no melech, was this intended to be Beis Din's responsibility? Is there another model of governance which the Torah presents, or is this the first time we've ever seen like a solution to the problem of how to self-regulate a community?
Well, I would say this seems to be the statement, right? We'll see. Some Rishonim are going to say this statement itself is grounded in, you know, Hefker Bes and Hefker, which is itself an idea of Kol Asher Lo Yavo L'Shlosh Hayamim, that they're Roshei Nachalos. But I would say this is the authoritative statement on the Torah's conception of political self-governance and social regulation.
Right, so I understand that Beis Din has Koach of Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, but I'm not sure that that's a Koach, which this is how that power is supposed to be utilized, right? Beis Din is a judicial body, not a legislative or a regulatory body.
So I think as an empirical fact, when the Rishonim taught and the Gemara talks about Beis Din, it's ambiguous. It's both a legislative and a judicial body. They don't. It's just a house of law. I don't think they have a clear-cut distinction between a house of legislature and a house of adjudication.
Okay. So then I guess the question will become, right, if that's true, then like, why give this authority to Bnei Ha'ir? Why not leave it in the hands of Beis Din, right? Like, anybody who's going to talk about Tuvei Ha'ir or some other way of arriving at a communal consensus, like, we should limit this to the already established institution of Beis Din.
Okay, good. I'm so happy you said that, because I think the answer is that you assume too much. You assume that Beis Din has this koach independent of their representing the Bnei Ha'ir. So you're assuming, right, that the authority is given to the, I don't know, the, like, the smart guys with the knowledge, right? As if like there's some clear cut power just given to the Talmidei Chachamim of the town. Arguably, the koach of Dine Mamanis that a Beis Din has, or maybe even some of these other kochos, like to decide whether you're going to paskin like the Rambam or like the Rush, that really flows from their representational status as representing the will of the Bnei Ha'ir. So I'm saying, Gabe, even if you find the halacha referring to the Beis Din as having this power, you have to ask whether they have that power qua being the Mimune Ha'ir, as opposed to qua being like the scholars.
Okay. It seems like, yeah, Kira and I spoke about this yesterday. It seems like there's a murky line that needs to be drawn between Beis Din's different sources of authority. There's like a top-down authority and a bottom-up authority according to that model. And we'll need to figure out like where each one begins and the other one starts.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. But the first step in that process is recognizing that at least some of the authority is bottom up.
Yeah, okay.
Right? which I think is oftentimes not appreciated, right? Or not it's missed out in the analysis of the powers that a Bezin has.
All right, this is an interesting Mikar smach for what the like Yeshivish belt says about Siyata Deshmaya establishing like standards of thought or stock. Like that's the classic Yeshivish rejoinder to like what people say, why is the Mishnah Brura, you know, presumptively compelling, or why Machatesi that the Yud Gimel Ikrim are the like the working standard. They're always like, there's a Siyata Deshmaya. If it was Mikabel by everybody, then it's the, then that speaks to its validity.
Yeah.
Shecher also thinks that. He thinks that the Poske Hador are infused with Ruach HaKodesh. That's what guides them. What is that noise?
I think it's Gabe. Someone's like buzzing nearby.
Hey, but Cole, you're saying the opposite.
Yeah, Cole, I think you and Shua are saying vastly different things. Shua is saying that the Siyata Deshmaya is just it's just pointing you toward the normative force of it being accepted by a community.
Huh? Say again?
Shua, you want to, right? Am I correct in understanding your view, Shua? You're muted.
Yeah, basically. I think they use the term Siyata Deshmaya, but what they mean to say is that the reason that it has this normative force is because for whatever reason, it has become nispashed, it's become accepted, right? Like, I don't know, it's like a very classic hack in yeshivas. Like, when the Chavetz Chaim wrote the Mishnah Brura in Europe, nobody followed it. Like, nobody did. But in America, it has this, like, presumptive force that you need to, like, work off of if you're going to move away from it. And so, okay. to some people, that's just a mistake. And they're like, you shouldn't presume to that halacha is like the Mishnah Berurah Keneged Aruch HaShulchan or whatever. But what other people say is that by virtue of it kind of like achieving the status, however it achieved it, it now does have that normative force.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just going to give a plug for my forthcoming critique of Rupture and Reconstruction once again.
Is it actually forthcoming?
Yeah, forthcoming at some point.
Have you set pen to paper?
No, not yet.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
The point is that you know, this idea of mimetic tradition versus the written tradition, a lot of the written tradition only has normative force because of its mimetic, right, acceptance within certain communities. So I think this fundamental distinction between the two different kind of sources of halakha is flawed, right? Like as Shua is pointing out, the reason why the Mishnah Berurah has normative force is because communities took up the Mishnah Berurah as authoritative.
I see, now, Shua, now I see what you're saying, but why is that such a yeshivish thing to think?
Well, they're saying the yeshivish part is that Akash Baruch Hu always, that Akash Baruch Hu set things up in such a way that that America would. It is Siyata Deshmaya that America accepted the Mishnah Brura, which is always the Amita Shel Torah.
Communal acceptance as like a certifying that.
Exactly.
That strikes me as good. Yeah. Better than
Brura. Good. So let's look at some of the interesting makoros here. First, I want to talk about this general Kalach Takana as emerging from this Sugya of Rashan Bnei Yair. For the general Kalach Takana that Tzibor has. Then I want to look at the Tzibor versus Bezdin question. So the first source that I have in the source sheet here is the Chibas Agonim. This is a case of a town that was sacked and burnt. And what happened is that the Jewish members of the town lost all the ksivas. Right? So they didn't really know how much each woman was entitled to either upon divorce or the death of her husband. So they asked the Gonim, what should we do? How are we going to reconstruct the amounts? We don't have any records to work from. And so he says, just make a takana, right? Do whatever research you can to see if you could find any ksivas, but then just make a rule legislatively as to what should bind each woman in the community. Misha meis baila v'adayin lo gav seksuvasa yachukula lefi ma sheyiru v'yigzru azakenim gzeira v'yasimu es hadavar aleim l'choku mishpat. Right, just make a rule. V'chol asher lo yishma v'yakabal av chok azakenim, you should put him in nidoy and cheiram v'yigzru also ad sheyachzru l'mutav. And then he generalizes. This is the general policy. V'kachu shekol mikra sheyikra l'vnei medina. So any event that has to be regulated by the Bnei Medina, v'chulam shavim bo, v'takana hu lahem. These are very interesting phrases about the scope, right? It's for the public good. It's takana hu lahem, kulam shavim bo. There's like general acceptance. V'tzrichim lo, it's necessary. Kofin zeze lo so davar. V'haskamas hazakenim no heges bam. V'chol bnei hamedina nechnasim tachteihem. He cites Kol Ashal Yavlo Shlosh Tayamin Ba'atas Hasarim, Yechram Kol Rechusho, and he'll be isolated from the Kehila. That's the Hefker Bez and Hefker Matar. And then he quotes our Sugiv, Amar Rabu Seinu, Rashayim B'nei Yir Lahasnos Al Asharim, Lahasnos Al Amidos Al Scharpol, Masial Kitzasan. Right? It's got to be that you have this just legislative power from Rashayim B'nei Yir. Then he adds, Vizek Kulo B'minyan Hazkenim. It could be that he just means that it has to be with the approval of the Zakenim, like in what Mitnick was pointing us to in the Gushpanka of the Adam Chashev. And he says,
Itamar, what is that Yiddish word?
So it's Aramaic, remember, Cole? The stamp of approval of. Nilmad, we learn from these sources, Sherishus Biyad Zikne Ha'ir. Interesting that he goes back to Zikne. L'taken takanos livnei iram, v'lochof es b'nei iram l'masha tiknu. So it's a little unclear here whether he's going in for a Zikanim view or it's the Zikanim as the representatives of the b'nei ir. But I think is important for us is he cites our sugya of Rashayim b'nei ir as one of the important mekoros to establish the legislative power of the community. But I don't think it takes a stand, and he associates it with Hefker Bez and Hefker, but I don't think he takes a stand on this B'nei Ha'ir versus Zikne Ha'ir question. Okay, we have a hand from Adam, and then Adin.
Yeah, I sort of read the phrase of B'zeh Kulo B'min HaZikinim, as that's sort of explaining why there's so much power in this case specifically. Specifically, when you have Zakenim, then you have all these other implications. But if you have other similar form of B'nei Ha'ir, then you know you may not be able to put people in Chayim, you may not be able to actually kick them out of the city. Your powers are limited.
Got it. So you think he's thinking that you need the Zakenim in order to do big stuff?
I mean, for this specific extent, I mean, you may be able to do something else if you don't have a minion of Zakenim, but you certainly wouldn't have this power.
Okay. Good. So you're reading him as thinking that the Zakenim are crucial, at least for the Nidoy and the Cherim components.
Right.
Okay. Definitely a fair read.
Doesn't he say that at the end? Vizek Kulo B'minyan HaZakenim?
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
I think he might just mean Minyan HaZakenim, meaning that you need their approval.
Oh.
As opposed to like it's their authority.
Like, they were the operatives in the whole thing. He says the Zakenim should be the ones to evaluate. They should be the ones to set the levels of the Ashir and Ani. I mean, even the phrase Kol Bnei Ir Nichnasim Tachtehem. I mean, I don't know. I read that as like they're going under the thumb of the Zakenim.
Nah.
Not sure if other people read it differently.
I think we're imputing a popular sovereignty idea into this. We say you go ahead, and then you do like. You know, if somebody would take a look, they would say, well, the government has the power, but we Americans say, no, people have the power. We just happen to abdicate. And so that, I think, is how Itamar's reading this as well.
Right. But I, it's not important for me to drag the Gonim into this view, right? So we'll see it in the Rashbam. Perfectly happy for the Gonim to think that it's actually this Canaim. I'm just saying, even if he always mentions Canaim, it's an open question whether it's the Canaim qua Canaim or is the Canaim qua the Mimune Ha'ir.
The Gonim typically are pretty big fans of centralized authority.
It's true. This is true.
Yeah, that was a point I was going to make a second ago. I'm not sure how much this affects any alumnus, but do we think that there's potentially a sociological like shift that we could be seeing here from, again, I know, however little I know about medieval like sociology from Revel, I know even less about Talmudic, but like a is it surprising that when we get to whatever early medieval Europe and the Goanim and high medieval the Rishonim, that like that there is that we're that we see an increased framing of this thing as like the that it's the leaders the Beit Din or whatever with authority over the Kahal, whereas the Bavli, like we saw in the Tosefta, is like much more seems much more bottom up.
It's interesting. A little beyond my pay grade, but that's definitely consistent with like this suggestion that was Kari was saying about the Goanim centralizing authority. One of the reasons why the Rambam didn't like the Goanim on a few scores, right? I don't want to make my case about the top down bottom up within this Tshuva of the Goanim. I think what I want to take out of this is Rashan B'nai Ayir as a makor for Takanos and the connection to Hefker Bezim Hefker, right? He's grounding it also in the makor of Kol Asher Lo Yavo L'Shlosh. Yeah, good. So I want to look at this Tshuva Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom makes a similar move in, I think, relating the sugyos. There's, I think what's striking about the Rabbeinu Gershom is he's clear about how it overrides the Din Torah. So in this Tshuva and Siman Tzalech Zayin, anybody want to tell us just the facts of the Rabbeinu Gershom story? Get all these good good medieval cases. Yoni, did you get a chance to see the, not Minik, Yoni Zolti?
No, not yet.
Okay. Anybody get a chance?
Try to give it a shot. Or at least the rough outline of it was that.
Like, yeah, give us the rough outline of it.
So that we, that like a ship sinks and Reuven and the wares are sunk down. Reuven is attempting to recover his teva. I have to go teach in a second. Reuven is trying to recover his wares. I mean that the guy who he hires sells some of the recovered wares to Shimon, and claims that it was within his right to do so because it's an aveda shatva benahar, and Reuven is claiming that like that the agreement that we had here in this case was that the original owners retained property rights based on the agreement that we had reached in a specific case.
Well, close. I would say the big picture issue is you're right. The boat sinks. There's a lot of property on there. From the pure rules of Dine Aveda, you're learning a little more about Metzia. See the first half of Masechta Yush, right? So from the pure rules of Aveda Sheshat Fanar and Yush, it sounds like Reuven forfeited his property, right? Whatever Yush does, right? It's no longer his. But there was a takana in the town that there were 30 days, right? Everyone should go and look for the stuff. And anybody who found the thing had to return it to Reuven. And Rabbeinu Gershom says that the takana overrides the din yiyush of aveda sheshafanar. Right? That's what's important for our purposes. So he says, here's the backstory. Here. Viala Mamon. Sorry. Viala Mamon Shel Reuven Kavuzman Laso Salav Mochama Vakehilos Shahayu Nikbatim Sham Nis Atzwa Vedas Acheyem Vigazru Ba'alo Vishvua Amishi Agia Liyada Mikol Mash Nevad Bososvina Shayachso Ba'al Aveda. I mean, I got no Aguru Kilos Yisrael Shomisha Yasid Klum. So they made a takana that everyone has to return the things they find from this guy. So there was, I guess, a certain time frame for the takana. Within that time frame, somebody found the thing and he sold it to somebody else. And the person who ultimately recovered it argued that Reuven loses his property right because he was Nisiyayesh, and it's an Avedah Sheshat Fenar, et cetera, et cetera. So Rabbeinu Gershom Paskins, he says, Afilu Nisiyayesh Reuven, even if there was Yush, Afilu Hachi Kivan Shegazru HaKol Shehayusham, HaKol Mishayavu Yadu Klo Mikol Avedah, et cetera. Sarech Shimon Zeh Lahachtir Asayoser LeRuven, Af Alpisha Torah Zichzalo Shehefker Bezdin Hefker. Right, so he cites the he grounds this koach takana of the tzibor in this idea of hefker bezin hefker. He cites the makor for hefker bezin hefker. So, if somebody want to tell us about this makor within the Yerusha case, Cole, I know you looked into it, right?
What the this is the Rashba from a while ago?
No, one of the minolan that. Bezin has this koach of hefker, bezin, hefker. So you have this name aside, yoresh adam asishto ketana. You know that issue?
I mean, I read the tshuva, but I'm not sure I have any particular expertise in them. I read the tshuva you're talking about. That's the.
So how do we know that there's this koach of the tzibor to be mafkir mamon? So the fact that in cases of kedushe ketana, or a Kedushin Durabanan, where there, it's not Chal Midoraisa, we're Oker the Kedushe, we're Oker the Yerusha Sa'av, and we give the Yerusha to the husband who's only a husband Midrabanan. This ring familiar to anyone? So that shows that the Takana could have the power to override the Torah's rules of Dine Mamanus. Pretty interesting that it's a Yerusha case, right? So we have this idea of hefker bezin hefker. One source is from Ezra, Kol Asher Yavo L'Shosh Sayam V'Asa Sarim. The second source is from Elu HaNachalos, Asher Nachalos Ezra Koyim, Yeshua Ben Nun, V'Roshe HaAvos L'Matos B'nei Yisrael, Ma'inyin Roshim Eitzel Avos, Ma'avos Manchilim B'neiim, Kol Masha Yirtu, Ach Roshim Manchilim Ba'am Kol Masha Yirtu. I mean, that second makar is also quite striking. It sounds like just like a father has property rights and could decide what he wants to do with his property, so too the Roshe Avos kind of control the property within their jurisdiction, and they can make any takana regarding the property under their authority. That's something to think about. But here is the kicker, Vim Tomar. Zachary, why don't you take us through the Vim Tomar?
Sure. Yeah. So inside. Pim Tomar Kiamrina Hefker based in Hefker, based in Chashuv, going Shame Vehilo, Avala in the low, Leklamima. So if you're gonna suggest perhaps Hefker based in Hefker works by these kind of like baked in takanos or by these more powerful Bate Din like Shame and Hillel, but nowadays it's not applicable. He's saying Leklamima, that's not the case.
Yeah, you don't have to go through the details.
Points, right. So Hilkach, Masha Asu Akihilos, because they rasam gezera, umaseha maisa. Therefore, what the Kihilos do, the gezeras are valid and their deeds are valid. Vaimish, Shimon Lapol, Zerasam, etc. Kimitamim Elu, Mitamim Achirim, Lozabachim, anything. So pretty much he's saying that there is some question of whether Hefker based in Hefker is actually a kind of like a universal property that every basin has access to. And here by extension, not just the basin, but kind of the Kahal. And he kind of firmly comes on the affirmative side. He says, like, yeah, of course, this Zibor has the ability to be mafkir things.
Yeah, so notice the moves, right? You start off with this idea of hefker bezin hefker that the Gemara applies to takanos drabanan, right? How do you know that Chazal could be oker Yerusha Sa'av and give it to the Yerusha Sabal in a case of Kedushin drabanan? You might think that's like a specific koach rabbanon, right? That they can make these takanos, maybe losasur. But instead, Rabbeinu Gershom, and I guess in his way, that tshuva the gonim, Rabbeinu Gershom says, no, that applies really to any community to do something. They have a similar koach, right? That same koach that the rabbanon used to be oker Yerusha Sa'av and give it to the Baal, every community has with respect to the dine mamonis in their jurisdiction. So even if the Torah says that there's hefker and Savedah Sheshat Fenar, the gezerah of the community has the power to block the property right forfeiture, right? They could assign it back to Reuven, even though at the halacha he loses it. Then he says, you know, this is a koach that every community has. You know, masha also a kihilos gzeirasam gzeira maseh maisa. That's just this very broad power that exists. Now again, I didn't assign this to tease out the question of whether it's Dafka the Zakenim or the Bnei Yair. But in terms of expanding Hefker, Bezen, Hefker to the Kihilos, that's very important. And just in terms of, you know, this explicit notion that it's Keneged Din Torah, right? You know, in the beginning, he was even more explicit about this. You know, Afal Pi Sha Torah Zichzalo, even though the Torah gave it to Shimon, the community has the power to assign it back to Reuven. Zilti, you have a hand?
Yeah, I think it's like an interesting move. And then like he asked the question, how does Hefker Beitin Hefker work for non, you know, if you know, like Janak Shammai and Hillel? And then he quotes this Gemara that effectively that the word of the Canaan was always, you know, written without naming any individuals because, you know, every, you know, Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmo Bedoro, every generation had its leaders effectively.
And I want to add to that, Yoni. Notice that it's Nisman Neparnas Alat Sibor. He was appointed. It's not about, right, like the, oh, somebody is just like the biggest Hamachacham. You know, Minnick said, maybe I was reading in, you know, the Zakenim as the Mimune Ha'ir. And this Bryce that he's quoting is clear that if once you're Nismane Parnas Alat Sibor, you're Ka'avir Shebavirim. So it's the appointment that grants you that halachic authority.
Yeah, so I'm saying, so then at that point, then he later says, Hilkach Mashasu Akilo Gzeratum Gzera. Is he saying that the Kihilos Gzera works? Or is he really saying that the Kihilos through the Rabbanim, and the Rabbanim may get their power because they were appointed by the Kihila, but at the end of the day, if he didn't have the Zakenim, then it wouldn't work.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't have a strong view about the meaning of Rabbeinu Gershom on that, about the exact position that he's taking on this question. We'll see in the Chuvas HaRashba and the Rivash and the Tashbates, they take clear stands on that question about the Koach HaTzibor versus Koach Bezdin. So we're gonna look at that there. Here I just want to build up the relationship between Koach Takana and Koach Hefker Bezen Hefker as being like having a common, you know, halachic status.
Well, it could be just that the Hefker Beitin Hefker kind of allows it to kind of to take place. Like you need some type of mechanism.
Yeah, but that could be, right? But it shouldn't. But it sounds to me just from these sugyas, right? We'll see more examples. It seems uncontroversial that whoever has this Koach Takana in the call, whether it's the bezdin of the call or the call itself, the bezdin, the kahila has the koach to make takanos and dinim aminos. Right, that sounds pretty clear from these sources. So, suppose they wanted to make a takana about defamation. Now, let's say the halacha doesn't have liability for defamation, but the tzibor wanted to make a takana. It seems pretty clear that would be binding, right? Suppose the halacha has strict liability rule for Adam Mor Liolam, and the Tzibor wanted to make a takana of a fault liability rule. It sounds like that's all going to be good according to Hefker Bezen Hefker, right? Is that the sense you get from these Makoros? Yeah, I mean you see this, right? The Torah says the father inherits the daughter. Oh, but if there's a Gzeiras at Tzibor, then the husband could inherit her, right? Which is the equation that the Rabbeinu Gershom makes here.
I mean, the kind of, I don't know if this is kind of the thread that you're trying to pull through the whole year so far, but I mean, if you combine this with their emotion in the beginning, I mean, it becomes basically a wholesale importation of whatever the law happens to be in the place where those people are, as long as they're not too insulated. So basically what that's saying is Torah law is for when people were in ghettos, but like nowadays we're more, because we're exposed to other laws and you connect your Moshe to this, you end up with just a real wholesale copy paste from secular law into all disputes that, you know, a Bezin's going to look at. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's, that's not exactly where I want to go yet, but this is, I think, providing the groundwork for that kind of a theory. I don't think you have to go as all in as you're going in the way you phrase it right now. But see, for example, there are different ways of phrasing it. What today is the kehila, right? So Yoni, you might say, well, yeah, if everyone just, well, let's hold off on that issue for a second, Yoni. But yeah, that's kind of the direction that we're going to go without being so extreme.
Well, right. I'm just saying, like, to highlight the issue from before was, what are the guardrails basically that stopped us from just going to doing that? So some of the guardrails are the fact that it has to go through tzibor or memuna al tzibor, or it has to be adam chashuv, or it can't be, you know, Rabbeinu Tam's guardrail is also going to apply here. But I'm just trying to keep those in mind and understand why they would be there.
Yeah, good. So we have to figure out what guardrails there are. I'm a little interested right now, something we should keep in the back of our minds, like in a modern day analogy, what's the equivalent of the kehila, right? So, you know, we had this din Torah, for example, of this guy who from the Five Towns who had rented a property in Florida for Pesach. And it was more of like this Hasidish, the guy who's renting out the property is a Hasidish guy. And the modern Orthodox guy from the Five Towns, his rabbi said no one can go to Florida for Yontif. Right? You know, there's that thing, like anyone who goes to Florida, they're like, you know, Rotseach. So he said, oh, my Rav said I can't go. I guess he didn't want to go because he couldn't really travel anyway. So he didn't go, right? He was saying, he was like, ones machmas gzeras kahal, or something like that. And it's an interesting question today, whether like anybody sees their community as having, or their communal rabbi as having that kind of authority, right? I take it that's like a suggestion. You know, the rabbi says not to go. It's like, oh, thank you. You know, thanks for your 2 cents. Not that there's this like binding authority of koach hakol that, you know, if the young Israel would mirror even wanted to, it could legislate these kinds of takanos. People don't join their shuls with that in mind. You know, they join the shul for the kiddush and for the convenience of having a good minyan.
I think
that's something to keep in mind. By the way, same thing for YU. You know, it's this question of when they're mafkei the svarim in the base medrash every year, right? It's like, well, you know, who gave you the authority to mafkei our private possessions in the base medrash?
It's surprising that you bring up COVID specifically as your example, because actually I would argue that, like, I agree with most things. Like, you know, your Rav Rishul says, like, oh, Pasen's like hold 2 days in Eretz Yisrael. Like, is that really like the same like a Bani Sakana? But how many days? Like, people don't really follow what their Rav says if they don't like it. But I actually think with COVID specifically is like one of those things where most of the modern Orthodox community has kind of coalesced around single positions.
Yeah. Notice Yoni. Are you saying that the coalescence itself creates the normative rule?
Yeah, I think, like, for instance, like Bergen County, like the group of Bergen County made a rule, and it became like, I mean, you're effectively in like harem of some sort. Like if you like go against the rules, like there is like a certain social.
Okay, but I do want to distinguish right now between the question of whether you're saying the fact that everyone practices this way that generates the rule, or you're saying that's evidentiary of the fact that they accepted the halachic authority of like the modern Orthodox rabbinate
or something. I think they did. I think a lot of people did not like the rule, but yet there was still a wide scale acceptance because rabbis had said so.
Okay. Something to contemplate, but I'm not interested in that question yet. Right. I'm just trying to figure out what today is the equivalent of the call. To Yoni's point, meaning to Minnick's point, I think there's a radical argument that could be made. I don't think it's implausible that the equivalent of the call today is really the legislature, because we participate in legislation to do all this civil coordination work. Nobody looks to their shul to make rules of the traffic for the community. And so, right, we all look to local legislatures to do that. And so you might say, if this is not about, you know, to get to Gabe's point, this is not about like rabbinic authority, putting rabbinic in scare quotes, right? It's more just about, well, communities have to coordinate social policies in order for them to be able to function. Then the right analog of B'nai HaKol today is your local legislature, right? when you vote for your representatives, you know, they're going to make laws about speeding tickets and real estate taxes and things like that. And so those, so then you might say that gives normative power to even like what Cuomo or de Blasio is doing, because that's the equivalent of the here today. But I don't want to endorse that view right now. I just want to lay out that possibility. But if you want to weigh in on this before we go back to, I think it's an interesting view, right? Cole, looks like you're, I mean, Donnie.
A group of people in the United States in a city get together in their city council and they pass a law, you know, they vote 50 to 30. So I'm like pretty sure that I know that vote is what gives the law validity, but it's notoriously difficult to give any account of, and it's one of the reasons, it's one of the things that like, you know, a Burkean will fall back on. It's notoriously difficult to give any account of like the, you know, foundational authorization of political authority. And even like what the current rules, so people usually know how to tell whether a majority votes for something once we've defined who can vote, but it's famously difficult to give an account, and Locke is kind of like, I don't know how persuasive it is, in the second treatise, like why these rules we didn't vote for, you know, it's like that scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where King Arthur, it's very instructive. The King Arthur shows up and, you know, to this peasant, And the peasant said, and he orders the peasant to do something. And the peasant says, well, who are you? And Arthur says, I'm your king. And the peasant says, well, I didn't vote for you. Right. And then Dennis the peasant says, you know, strain. And then King Arthur gives, it's actually very instructive. King Arthur says, like, you know, the Lady of the Lake held forth Excalibur, and that made me king. And Dennis the peasant says, listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not some farcical aquatic ceremony. That was actually my yearbook quote in high school. Kid you not. Dory's yearbook quote was some pious nonsense than Thomas Jefferson. Anyway, much worse political philosophy too than what I just said. But so it's not easy to give like an account of, I brought up Burke because Burke's, there's a whole trend in, or it's actually worth going into this history just a little bit right now. There's a whole trend in early modern political thought. It has a parallel in Aristotle, but the one who jacks it through the roof is Hobbes, to give these like justificatory etiologies of state power. Like Hobbes says, you know, maybe all the fathers get together in the state of nature. And I mean, he's not saying this actually happened. He's saying this, or maybe he did believe it actually happened, but he's saying that this is the kind of, it's the possibility of this kind of thing that gives the state its authority. This concern with foundations and beginnings is a feature of early modern political thought. The big counter force in that trend is Edmund Burke, who says, like, we know nothing. These questions about, like, you know, how the polity is constituted fundamentally, those are virtually unanswerable. And not just because, like, history is, I mean, he does say, like, these things, you know, should be kept behind, like, a veil, basically, because usually they involve, like, violence and horrific injustice. But even if we knew, it's not quite clear how to draw the lines of who's in and out. I say all this just to make the point that, like, it's probably wise to be extremely liberal with what we're going to count as communal consent. And it'll be highly context dependent, and we don't want to ask one question too many because it will it will cause us to make unsustainable claims about the origin of any kind of exercise of political power within the community.
Okay, that's all very good. I think what I want to draw out of this Makoros we've seen thus far are three broad points, Cole. Tell me if any of them are violating the one question too many problem. Number one, Kihilos, either on their own or through their representatives or through the Chachamim, have very broad powers to make takanos, right? Even last, midin Torah, right? To borrow Rashi's phrase. Number two, want to raise the question about how we understand the concept of the kihila today, right? What's the equivalent of Rashayin B'nei Yir La'asiyah Kitasan?
I think that's the one I want to say, like, don't ask that question with too much curiosity.
And why not? I think the natural move is to say, well, it's like some sort of congregational notion of like a shul or maybe like a shkafic constituency. But I also want to throw out the possibility here, a la Mitnick's point, that no, maybe the right halachic analog today is like how we do social coordination on the important. That's what Rashayin B'nei Yir is about, right? It's about.
Right. I want to give a functional definition of. I want to give a highly contextual. I think who the kahal is will depend on how the issue is in fact, how a particular, I want to say that who the kahal is for like a particular question, it won't have a general answer, I don't think. It could be that in some cases the kahal is like children. I kid you not, we could think of cases where actually like what we're going to accept as halacha is, you know, is ends up being paskined by children. I'll give you an example. Like some parent is not some adult is like never home with their kids or something like that. So you could imagine the rav of the shul going to the, and the wife doesn't mind, but you could imagine the rav going to the shul, or the rav of the shul going to the couple and saying, hey, listen, you know, kids these days expect their parents, both of them, to be home for dinner every night or something like that. I mean, that's so it'll be highly issue dependent.
I agree. I just want us to be open-minded enough that we shouldn't rule out the, at least for, if Rashayin B'nei Yir is a halachic idea that there has to be some authoritative way for coordinating social cooperation, rules of the road, rules of prices. You know, it seems reasonable to me to think that like your local communal rabbi is not doing that.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I was going to say a minute. So
like, it seems to me wrong to think that like the rabbi of the Young Israel of Woodmere is the guy in charge of making traffic rules for the Jewish community of Woodmere. I think, by the way, you might say something similar for even like COVID response, right? It seems strange to think that like the rabbinic leadership is the right people to make those kinds of takanos in some cases.
Yeah, although even commercially, I'll say like I'm sure that there are, I'm sure in certain communities, at least in, I mean, the place to look for the extent of this really is like Haredi and Hasidic neighborhoods where they actually take rabbinic authority seriously.
That's just incidental.
That's fine. I agree.
It's just incidental. It's like,
I agree.
It's like in Iran, right? If the Ayatollah is the one who makes the speeding rules, then okay, you decide to funnel the speeding rules through him.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. I mean, I don't think we're disagreeing. What I'm saying is that nowadays, I'm making an empirical point. Nowadays, I think there probably is, and there are in certain communities, there is more intervention in the commercial life of the community from rabbinic leadership than there is in if Rav Willig got up in his shul and said like, you need to do like such and such things with your businesses and so on, unless it's like, you know, don't mistreat your employees. gods, right? Rav Willig has probably like ethical authority with his congregation, but the Balabatim aren't going to sit there and listen to Rosh Kollel give economic advice. There, I think you're right. Although in Lakewood, I imagine they're much more open to Rav Malchiel, like just poskening things commercially. Anyway, that's a empirical.
They never would. I mean, basically, the issue you're pointing out is that the authority that used to be there has now splintered into 1,000 different areas, just like the community is splintered into places. What and here's where is a question that is either reasonable minds can differ or just impossible to answer.
Chaim Soloveitchik makes the point that this is not a new problem. In Rupture and Reconstruction, Chaim Soloveitchik makes the point that like it has been since the dissolution of what he calls the closed corporate states of medieval Europe. I don't know what that term refers to, but I assume he knows what it refers to. Jews, I think his phrase is something like Jews have been, you know, pagans in the workplace. Jews have been religious at home and pagans in the workplace. Basically like Jewish economic authority. Again, this probably isn't true in the shtetls. Like I'm sure that, you know, rabbis had what to say in like, especially in small towns. They probably have more to say the more isolated the Jews are.
Cole, is that it doesn't matter whether leadership has what to say. Right? The question is like, who's the right authority? Like who's tasked? Interesting question. Who gets to decide who gets to be tasked, but who's tasked primarily with civil and social coordination?
Yeah. I just say that's a social, you know, that's a social, like look where the people look, you know?
Yeah. Right. Sounds right. Good. So, I mean, so those are the first two questions. The third question obviously is, to what extent do you need a formal enactment for Rasha and B'nai Ha'ir? And is it possible sometimes to bypass the formal enactment by just looking to the practices on their own? This is my bad analogy to Bruce Ackerman last week. Right? And this is where I think this is where we're going to connect the dots between the Darshin and Lashon Hegio Minhag question and the Rashon and B'nai Ha'ir Sugya, right?
You should be very sympathetic to the idea that it relates to the point you're making a few, like 30 minutes ago about the Mishnah Brura. You should be very sympathetic to the notion that we shouldn't deeply distinguish between a formal enactment and communal practice, right? I mean, because the formal enactment probably only gets its authority from the informal communal. All right, good. Glad we're on the.
Yeah, I told you, exactly right.
As I said a few months ago, as long as all the premises are specified, you and I always agree.
Right. Okay, good. So I want to look at this just Marami Ruinberg, and then we'll leave the real question about the Kolach HaTzibur Kibbezdin for Thursday's Chabura. But let's take a quick look at the Tshuva Marami Ruinberg in 75.
Can I just add one more thing based on what Cole is saying?
Sure.
Do you think that the power of a tzibur could weaken and perhaps totally get negated when you lose the ability to find the tzibur? Meaning, we talked about how it's splintered, and for each thing, it could be somebody different. Do you think that because of that, if the tzibur doesn't, or memunim, don't contain the totality of the power of the tzibur, that then it's gone?
It's interesting.
I'm not quite sure I understand what Minik's question is.
Basically, it makes sense for a tzibur to have any power if it has all power. But if it doesn't have all power, it doesn't make sense for it to have any power.
Nobody ever has all power.
Oh, okay. You get what I'm saying.
No, but you could say like the tzibur is disintegrated to such an extent that there just is no koach tzibur nowadays. That's the idea.
On the Upper West Side, you know, where people go to shul and that's it, or something like that. And
right, so it depends. My intuition, we'll look deeper into this, see if it's confirmed, is that you always need, you can't have a society without there being an authority that coordinates social activities, right? It's a social necessity. It's like you can't function without people being able to make rules. I mean, you'll be in a state of nature then, right? Which is just
no. That's not true. Spontaneous coordination is a well established. That's just not true.
But spontaneous coordination is a kind of coordination, right?
There's no God. It would be wrong to say. Maybe this is a good reason to dispense with the. communities frequently govern themselves without many human institutions are surprisingly bereft of sovereigns, is the point that I'm making.
I think that's fine. I think that's okay, but you still need some normative social rules to govern, right?
Yeah, sure. In fact, you might even define a community with respect to a certain task as a rule that's kind of, you know, infinitely iteratively understood. So I understand that you understand that I understand that you understand, and so on and so
right,
forth.
Right. But I think that's if so, Yoni, if Rashan Ben-Ayir is getting at that point, and you would, it has nothing to do with like how you don't need a European model of Jewish communities with like a legal recognition to get these things off the ground. The point is like the Jewish community has this problem of social coordination, and what's the right, who has the normative halachic authority to coordinate it?
Sure. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the way that the Rishon Bnei Yair is like a, I would say B'dievet or something like that, it's more of a, it's a Bavel thing. Like, I don't think Bnei Yair and Eretz Yisrael would have had that, right? Because it was in Beis Din. And the first, as the that power structure changes and deteriorates, you know, maybe the question is who should have it rather than who does have it. So maybe it'd be better if shore rabbis have it because it's just more organized. Or, you know, that's like a totally different way of approaching it as to, okay, we have a need for power and how do we fill that power rather than we have a source of power and where does that power like naturally inhere?
Yes, I think that's right. Just the one thing I would disagree with in your formulation is, I think even in Eretz Yisrael, the reason why the Beis Din would have the social coordination power is just because that's the reasonable body to empower with the social coordination rulemaking capacity. Not, you don't need, as I'm saying, you don't need some smicha ishmi pi ishmi pi Moshe Rabbeinu to make the speed limit rules, right? So this gets to Gabe's point about, you know, maybe there are different kochos that a Beis Din has. I don't think we should assume that, I don't think we should assume that presumptively the Beis Din needs to have this top-down power to decide the speed limits.
Well, does Beis Din need Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, or not? I guess that's the question. If Beis Din has the inherent power and everything else, as Rishonim say, is like Beis Din, it's like Beis Din, is approximating Beis Din through some other halachic mechanism that's based on a medrash or a navi or whatever, right? So perhaps Beis Din didn't even need that. And perhaps Beis Din was the ideal form. There's a power vacuum. We fill it with what we have. And if what we have changes, we got to look again to see what are we going to fill it with.
Yeah.
The Beis Din probably is the ideal form in the sense that it's like, you know, it's three guys. Like you can, it's really easy to tell who the Beis Din is. They're three guys wearing, or women. Oh, no.
No, this is Beis Din HaGadol. It's.
Oh, whatever, whoever it is. They're in a place. You know, they wear special clothes.
The point is, do they need to be appointed? I mean, is there any process of appointment of the tzibur of the Beis Din HaGadol? I don't think so. So if they weren't appointed, then what gave them their power?
These are interesting questions. I just want to get this one last.
All right, okay. Thank you.
Before next Chabura. So we have this tshuva from Aram Rittenberg and Tafayin Dalid. It's really a tshuva of Yosef Tuvelim. That's like pre-Rashi France. Basically, the king was collecting taxes from the Jewish community. The Jewish community had to decide how to distribute the tax burden amongst all its members. So they made a takana that everyone's got to contribute this amount. Doesn't matter for our purposes. So you can see here. And then what happened is two people basically said, haha, we're not bound by the takana. They ran to a different city and they asked the zakenim of the other city to annul or to declare that the takana doesn't apply to them. And they made a big deal about it, like, you know, pick on Young Gezel Woodmir, haha, Young Gezel Woodmir made this takana, but we went to Englewood and the rabbi in Englewood told us that, you know, we don't have to listen to what the Woodmir takana said. So the response for Yosef Tuvelim is nearly, Dekivan Shabiru Lahem Akal Ne'emanim, since the Kahal picked trustees, right, representatives, we also Lahem Takana Al Piha Bikim, and they made this Takana based off the experts of the fair way to collect the taxes. Vigazru Gezeira Bahaskamasan, Ein Koach Lashum Kahal Lahafer Levatel. lo mishum ribay chachma v'lo mishum ribay matirin shadavar zed din mamon hu v'chol makam shev din mamon ben shnei anashim v'gazer bezin alachag v'fora afilo osa minyan v'osa bezin asma inyach alahatir. Basically, he thinks, because the Kohel made the Takana the right way by being the Varer Ne'emanim, I think, again, this just shows that there was this appointment of representatives for the purpose of making the Takana. It's going to be binding. And how do we know that a Kohel has this authority, or that the leaders of the Kohel has this authority? Matzinu shenasnu chachamim koach v'chozek l'chol kehila v'kehila lasos Takana la'atzman. Kehilos are self-authenticating sources of political authority, to borrow the Kantian analogy. They're like, you know, they're not bound by, they're not subject to other kehilos.
And in the metaphysics, where is that? Where is that? Is that in the metaphysics of morals?
Yeah. Shekein shaninu, rashayin b'nei ha'ir, l'hasno salamidos v'alasharim, v'alschar b'mahasiyal kitzasam. The Yom Rabbi Yitzchak, minayin shehefker bezen hefker. So here again, you get the blending of Rashon b'nei Ha'ir la'asiyal kitzasan, hefker bezen hefker, and this communal authority to make takanos. Halamadita, sherashayin bezden shevachol kihila b'kihila ligzar al kihilam kifi riyasam v'tzorech hasha, v'ein achir michol mevatel al takanasam, and here Mitnick will be happy, v'ad shelo tehev aryanos shel Torah. Some constraint, right? It can't be of our Yonah Shel Torah. Not clear what that means, because we saw in the Shu'ar Bino Gershom that it can mevatel the Dina Yerusha, the Dina Yush, right? And in this case, even when he cites Hefker Bezen Hefker, it's mevatel the Dina Yerusha Shel Torah. So you have to figure out what does that mean of our Yonah Shel Torah. The Rabbi Yosef Tuvelim here says at the end, he has this phrase. If an outside bezin were able to undo what this kehila did, just saying, if another kehila had the power to undo another kehila's takana, it would undermine like the ability to coordinate social functioning. Yafkia kol echad min amas, mikol takanos bezin, right? Just communities wouldn't have the right kind of authority they need if another community could just step in and undo it. So this tshuva is very interesting. Again, it unites Rashayin b'nei Ha'ir with the Hefker bezin Hefker, with the koach to make takanos. Here too, it sounds like it's a koach in the kehila, right? Every kehila has this power, although he does say Rashayin bezdin shebechol kehila. But he also speaks about biru lehem ha-kohol ne'emanim. You know, the community chooses representatives. And in the last line, I think it's important because he talks about you don't want to undermine the social function of each community being able to make takanos, right? So if another community can mevatel it, that would undermine the importance of these takana making powers. And so it's like a reductio ad absurdum, clearly somebody else can't interfere. So think about that. This is just the main groundwork I want to lay. What we'll pick up with on Thursday is this succession of tshuvos in the Rashba and the Rivash and the Tashbates, where they seem to drop the requirement of Zakenim. They seem to drop the requirement of Bezdin. In some cases, they even seem to drop the requirement of formal legislative enactments. So I think it's almost, they're making the connection that I want to get at, that sometimes the practices on their own could generate the quote-unquote takanos of Rashayin b'nei Ha'ir and Hefker bezen Hefker, the practices of the common folk, practices of the people. So this would connect the Darshin and Lashon Hedyotzogya with the halachic normative force of Rashon b'nei Ha'ir la'asiyal kitzasan. And that's what I want to pick up with on Thursday. We might do one more chabura after that on this whole min of Rashon b'nei Ha'ir thing, but I'm good to move on to Achilas Pol Mishal Baal Bayis after that. All right?
Me too.
Okay, good. Thanks, everyone. Good. This is Yashiko. This is a very helpful discussion today. Sorry, I think it's a very fundamental philosophical halakhic question, right? You can't get more basic than this. And think about the question of whether it's, you know, the legislature today is maybe that's who we use to do these social coordination problems, or do we need some sort of internal Jewish community authority?
Okay. God help us.
You don't like that call?